Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Honorable Chief Technology Officer, Corey Knockreiner.
Since when did you...
Oh yay!
When did you become honorable?
The guy said, oh yay, so it's obviously true.
We are back after a week off with a rather large news roundup, so let's get started with it right away. So we are back after a week off, and we actually have quite a bit of news to catch up on now. One, two, three, four, five different stories we're going to try and hit in this. So let's go ahead and hop right in, I guess. And our first one is actually...
Hopping today, not diving?
I don't know any other form of movement other than diving and hopping, apparently.
Wade, let's saunter into the news. Slowly and with confidence.
Next
shoulders
week,
back.
We can moonwalk in.
That sounds fun.
Yes. Anyways, our first story is actually kind of a big one. Just recently, Trend Micro's zero-day initiative announced a vulnerability they had found in the Android kernel, so the underlying operating system for Android, that basically was a privilege escalation vulnerability in a driver used by Linux-based operating systems to capture real-time video. And part of their disclosure, they said that it revolves around a lack of validating objects prior to performing actions on those objects, which is pretty common when it comes to privilege escalation vulnerabilities. The big deal on this one, though, is...
Kind of an existential crisis, though. How do you perform operation on something that doesn't exist? Pretty cool.
The big deal is
chicken
the
before the egg problem.
Yes, exactly.
And a security vulnerability to boot.
So it's not supposed to do that, and that's why it's a vulnerability.
Is that how we can hack God's universe if we figure out how to take an action on an object that hasn't been created yet?
I think so, yes. We've at least hacked Android's universe. That was very deep, Corey.
Sorry. Maybe that's what antimatter is.
Big deal, though. This is actually a zero-day vulnerability. It is, as of yet right now, unpatched, which is why the researchers aren't releasing all of the details on it.
Just sounds like it may not be. Actually, Google will probably succumb to pressure, but it seems like the researchers told Google about this a long time ago.
Yeah, they said mid-March is when they notified them. It was confirmed by Google by the end of June, stating that it would be fixed. And when they asked for an update last month in August, Google said there would be no further updates, and it remains
Which
unpatched.
Essentially means, I mean, if you interpret there will be no further updates, that means, sorry, you're out of luck, we're not patching it.
Exactly.
How do you interpret that?
Which is weird because, like, vulnerabilities in Android and iOS are worth a ton of money these days. And you would
think
that
to talk about the value of privilege escalation, right? I mean, privilege escalation seems... less a big deal because you already have to have some access on the system. But I think in this day and age of memory corruption, like or the mitigations for memory corruption flaws, like the classic buffer overflows, are not immediately as powerful as they once used to be. You know, one, there's mitigations that might prevent them from exploiting code, and two, oftentimes the privilege you get from it is a pretty low user. So I feel like the value of a privilege escalation vulnerability is much bigger than it was 10 years ago, because you really need to pair it with any, if you want root, you tend to need to pair it with a privilege escalation vulnerability nowadays.
Exactly, especially because like this could theoretically be exploited by like a sideloaded application, and we all know that people keep sideloading applications from untrusted sources, which as of right now might just get you like a keylogger or something, but this could give it full root access to the phone and cause a
everything
lot more
on the
damage.
Kernel. Yeah. And by the way, if you don't know the driver, it's, I believe, V4L2, which is video for Linux. It's, like you said, it's associated with camera, usually video capture from the camera. And I think the two just represents the next version of video for Linux. This reminds me a lot of the Dirty Cow exploit. I don't know if you remember that,
yep.
But that's kind of an example of how big privilege escalation is. Dirty Cow was a Linux vulnerability, a kernel-level vulnerability, that I think was late 2016 when it came out, but it was like probably the worst ever Linux kernel vulnerability privilege escalation in existence, since it was super reliable, easy to exploit.
And because Android's based off Linux, it also affected Android devices at the time too.
Exactly.
Like a lot of phones were able to be rooted because of that vulnerability.
And I do think this one's similar. I hear it's not as reliable and harder to exploit. Plus, that particular dirty cow was, I forget the exact subsystem, but it was based on something in the kernel that is available to everything. Whereas I think for this, the app or code that's trying to exploit this needs to already have privilege to access the video camera, which is a privilege you have to give it. So there is a caveat there, but still, I mean, we tend to be pretty permissive with letting people use our camera, especially if it's a side-loaded photo app.
Hopefully no one does a supply chain attack against Snapchat or something.
Or maybe that Russian old person app, FaceApp, was that what it was called?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that would be an ideal app to deliver this payload.
Oh, don't give them ideas.
Hope Russia's not listening.
Either way, there isn't really anything you can do in terms of patching, because there is no patch, but just be mindful of the apps that you install on your phone, because this could make bad apps worse, basically.
Yeah, the only thing you can do is somehow try to restrict interaction with the video, you know, the camera service. So
be mindful of the permissions you allow, as you always should be. Our next story is another bit of an interesting one. So just last week, attackers took over Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey's account after tricking his cellular network into handing over his mobile phone number and then abusing the SMS to tweet service that Twitter had. This caused Twitter to take down that service because the attackers were able to basically send out tweets from Jack's account.
I wonder if he'll take security seriously now at Twitter. Maybe we should thank the hackers for finally getting it on the CEO's radar.
Well, it's funny because, so this feature, basically how it worked was you have a phone number associated with your Twitter account, and then you text into a short code they had, 40404 in the United States. And whatever you text, it would associate the phone number you sent it from with accounts to find which account had that phone number on it and automatically send it out. So by spoofing or taking over the CEO's phone number, they could just tweet to that short code and send out a tweet under his account without any additional authentication. Like, you didn't even need a password because they just assumed if you had the phone number, you're set.
And it seems likely that, I don't think they know for sure, but this seems like basic SIM jacking, usually done by a social engineering phone call to the carrier. In fact, I think Twitter's even trying to lay some blame on the phone carriers themselves because, you know, it's not necessarily a technical hack. Someone just calls up the carrier, social engineers through hopefully they at least ask some sort of verification questions as a user, but then tries to get some sort of SIM swap, says, hey, I have a new SIM for my phone. Here's the new SIM. Can you activate the number here or something like that?
And this is actually getting to be pretty common. Like, this is what happened to Reddit with their developers, where people were able to steal their phone numbers and then bypass two-factor authentication because they were just using SMS-based at that point.
And by the way, I believe these hackers are doing this to other people. Recently, Chloe Moretz, I think that's how you pronounce that actress's name. She had suddenly her Twitter was starting to tweet out curse words and links to unusual images. Seems very similar. Some of the things that were tweeted out from Dorsey's account and from Chloe's account were like the Chuckling Squad was mentioned. So it seems like the Chuckling Squad is the group name. Mm-hmm. Seems like LulzSec seemed very similar to guys hacking for the lulz.
Great.
Some meme I didn't know about, the Chungus meme. It's Chungus is Fat Bugs Bunny, but somehow that came up in both the hacks of Twitter, you know, Dorsey and Moretz.
Lovely.
Yeah. So apparently they took over Moretz's account for 20 minutes too.
It is a small bit of irony that Twitter is asking people to add their phone number to enable two-factor authentication on their Twitter accounts, and that is basically what enabled someone to compromise people's accounts after they social engineered the phone number off the carrier.
Yeah, although I wouldn't blame the two-factor. It's really the feature that allows you to reply via a text message.
Yep.
And I do think, well, I think Twitter should have some blame in this. I definitely do think the carriers, if someone can just call up my carrier and suddenly take over my phone call, my phone number, that's a big carrier problem.
So maybe we need more security and social engineering training for cellular carriers.
It's happened forever. I mean, I guess it's the same problem as Gmail and Apple all had when people did password reset. So obviously people forget their password and do change their SIM. So you need to have mechanisms, but we need better human, spoken mechanisms to actually validate users in the same way we need more better digital authentication.
Funny you mentioned that. I had to reset my Apple ID password some time ago, and it quite literally took a month. They sent an email saying, verifying I want to reset it, and they said, all right, we will email you or contact you on this day with your password reset.
Oh, wow.
I was kind of appreciative of it because it meant that I had time to catch the first reset email if it was someone else maliciously doing it and stuff like that.
Smart changes, but definitely that's the issue with security. Convenience and security don't always go together.
It was pretty hardcore. I can't even imagine the hoops I'd have to jump through to reset my Gmail password. But interesting. So as of right now, the SMS to tweet function is still disabled. I don't know how they're going to bring it back. Because how do you, that'd be a pain to authenticate for every single tweet you have to do. So
I don't think they should. I don't really need the feature to reply via text message.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I've used that feature before and it's gotten me in trouble.
Yes, this is correct. Yes. I can count numerous times where you have failed to reply to an actual thread and just tweeted out your replies normally.
Yep.
That's right, Corey. Technology's hard.
I was just replying to the text.
Let's move on to our next story, which is yet another fun one. So you might remember the company Supermicro from a Bloomberg article back last October that we talked about on this podcast.
Fake news!
Yes.
At least that's what everyone but Bloomberg is saying.
The Bloomberg article claimed that Chinese spy chips were found on Supermicro manufactured motherboards. And Supermicro manufactures these motherboards for Defense Department deployments, government contracts all over across the states and really all over the world. So it was kind of a big deal. Supermicro very much denied the claims, and quite a few other people like Apple the Bloomberg article claimed were affected came out and said that it was not true as well. I think to this day Bloomberg is still standing by their
original claims. No, they did follow-up articles on it, basically doubling down. So,
So whether you believe that or not, Supermicro is back in the news again, where just this last week at the Open Source Firmware Conference in Silicon Valley, a security researcher from Eclipsium revealed a vulnerability.
These weird names are getting out of hand, guys.
Eclipsium's kind of cool. I saw that.
Eclipsium?
That's a cool name.
What's the metal they're going after in the Avatar movies? It just sounds like that to me. Planarium. I don't know.
Eclipsium, I think you guys have a cool name. Sounds like my World of Warcraft guild.
Let's just make up words. That's how, there's definitely venture capital companies where Google's such a great name. What word can we make up? And it's Unobtainium was the Avatar one. Unobtainium. It can't be more on the nose.
Exactly.
A metal everyone wants that you can't obtain. Good job, Eclipsium. Cool name.
Anyways, a researcher at Eclipsium at that conference revealed a vulnerability that he called USB Anywhere that he found in Supermicro servers. Now, the vulnerability is really a collection of vulnerabilities.
Can I do a behind the scenes? Because I'm reading Mark's notes on this, and it's USB or USGB Anywhere. I'm like, that's a cool new acronym, USBG.
Fat fingers sometimes, Corey.
I should shut up.
We
don't
all know
throw stones.
You have the perfect grammar, right?
Hey, as far as the external world knows, thanks to editors, who cares about internal emails?
You type too fast sometimes. Anyway.
Yes, that's my excuse.
The vulnerability is actually a collection of vulnerabilities, including plain text authentication, weak encryption, and authentication bypasses that could allow an attacker to connect to a Supermicro server over any network, so including the internet, via the Baseboard Management Controller, or BMC, and add a virtual USB device. And once you've added that, you can basically do whatever the heck you want on that server, whether it be reflash the operating system with something else, install other tools.
Yeah, the best device to use is the USB HID human interface device, which is essentially like a keyboard.
Yep.
And then once you have a virtual keyboard, you just script everything. And that's what rubber duckies use. You plug in a rubber ducky and it can do almost anything because it's just emulating a keyboard and it has scripts on the USB key that just spit out whatever commands you want to launch on the computer.
Basically, you could give that backdoor access that the Bloomberg article was claiming through the super secret Chinese chip on there. The researcher said that out of all the machines he tested in his lab, only Supermicro manufactured ones were vulnerable.
Weird.
Yeah.
Even ones that had the same USB or the same baseboard chipset.
Exactly. One interesting tidbit that came out of his presentation was a statement about the BMC, the baseboard management controller, where he said that the types of vulnerabilities commonly found in BMCs today are the same vulnerabilities that were commonly found in operating systems and applications a decade ago.
Yeah, kind of a theme in IoT in general, right?
Exactly.
Circa 2000 vulnerabilities.
Like systems that weren't receiving a whole lot of security attention that now when they finally are, we're realizing that no one gave them any security.
We're just talking about how memory corruption and privilege escalation are harder to exploit in OSs. Well, let's go to the chipsets now.
Exactly. He did a scan of the internet and found over 47,000 vulnerable servers accessible over the internet. This has actually been patched, so there is a patch available if you have a Supermicro manufactured motherboard. He mentioned in the disclosure process, he reported it mid-June. It took about a month to acknowledge the issue, but the patch is finally available. So it is kind of interesting that we went from the Chinese chip thing to now an actual backdoor vulnerability only affecting, as of right now, Supermicro servers. I don't like saying, I don't know. It's a bit of a coincidence, I think. But what are your thoughts on that, Corey? Careful. Don't dig a grave.
It's definitely interesting.
Yeah. So takeaway for that, if you have a Supermicro manufactured server, patch it. Because this vulnerability is fixed.
Yeah, Apple, you're not affected, obviously, because you never are, but go patch your servers.
I think Amazon was in that Bloomberg article as well, too.
They were.
Like some of their AWS servers were using it as well. I imagine they've already patched those, though, so we're probably safe. So let's move on to another story here. If you're a nerd like Corey and I, you've probably heard of the popular webcomic XKCD. If you troll around on the internet, on Reddit and stuff, you almost always encounter a thread that posts a relevant XKCD for whatever the topic is. They have 20,000 articles now, so there's one relevant for any situation.
Are you talking? I was too busy reading the latest XKCD comic called Throw Calculator. It's pretty cool. It's an interactive one. You actually interact with the comic to get the final result.
Interesting. Well, the XKCD's website has some forums, as do most websites these days. And it turns out that the forums were the victim of a breach where attackers stole info from 560,000 user accounts.
Irony.
Which included usernames, emails, and hashed passwords.
By the way, it is kind of ironic because XKCD, the reason nerds like us love him, he's really smart. I mean, he's a coder.
He's a previous rocket scientist.
And a security person, too. I mean, he has a lot of comics on SQL injection. In fact, whenever I'm trying to talk to non-techies about SQL injection, I always show one of his comics. So he actually knows his crap and probably focuses a bit on security. So
I mean, there is that famous XKCD comic about password security where he points out that correct horse battery staple is a incredibly secure password because that has a whole lot of entropy.
And I guess the good news is you'll talk about some of the tech details, but they at least seem to have secured their hashes a little better than some. I mean, they're not using our favorite hashing function, but they're at least salting.
They were, yeah. So it's the hashing function used by their forum software, PHP, BB, or whatever, where it's a specific version of MD5 that is uniquely salted for each individual password. That said, we got a hold of their database, and one of our analysts has been going through and cracking all of them. So far, we have found, I think the last count was 15 of the passwords were correct horse battery staple, which is
awesome.
A little funny. But keep an eye out. We're going to publish some research on that at some point once we finish.
And by the way, for the girlfriends or wives listening, I was in Australia last week, and one of the guys there was talking about how he listened to our podcast, and he was like, my girlfriend walked in when you were talking about olive oil spam, and she's like, why are they talking about cooking on a security show? I just wanted to shout out to your girlfriend that no salted hash is actually a technical concept. We're not talking about breakfast food.
God. Please tell us more about your journey to Australia, Corey.
I was down under.
It sounds truly awful.
Melbourne and Brisbane.
No
shrimps on a Barbie, though. I was disappointed. Everyone kind of looked at me funny when I asked about that.
Is that not the ultimate tourist food or something?
I don't think it exists in anything but American Hollywood movies.
Either way, XKCD took down their forums, at least temporarily, while they were resolving the vulnerability in this case. If you know you had an account on the XKCD forums, now's probably a good time to change your password.
I don't think I do, but maybe our researchers who have the database can find out.
I will find your password for you, Corey, just in case you want it.
Good job. I've lost my work password, and I always use the same one, so that would be really helpful.
You joke, but so many people do. So please, if you have an account on there, be sure to reset your password because it is now available on the interwebs. Let's move on to our last story. This is one that I am happy to share.
Yeah, this is like, what's that German word for?
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, we really enjoy Facebook news.
Yes.
Yummy.
So just this last week, researchers found a database online that detailed the phone numbers of 419 million Facebook users, linking their phone numbers to their account IDs. This database didn't have any password protection, which meant anyone that knew how or where to find it could have access to it.
I mean, they didn't say cloud S3 bucket, but it's pretty much, let's put a database somewhere and just forget to put a password on it.
I'm willing to bet that that is.
Why does Cambridge Analytica and all the telcos actually have to pay for this crap? They just leave it sitting around on the internet.
This comes after all the times over the last few years where Facebook has said they're focusing more on privacy protections. Comes after the snafu like Instagram, where they found out they had hundreds of millions of unencrypted passwords stored in their logs online. Facebook does state that the data set is old, and it comes from information obtained before changes made last year that removed the ability to find other people's phone numbers.
Well, that's good because I change my phone number every year, so I'm sure that'll help me.
Exactly. The data set has since been taken down by Facebook, but not after it became public.
By the way, besides firing the security guy, I think they actually need to fire the person in charge of monetizing their data because they're giving it away for free.
Exactly.
I mean, imagine they're a multi-trillion probably dollar company now. They could beat Apple if they actually made people pay for this information instead of letting all the hackers grab it.
I at this point, you should basically just consider anything you post to Facebook as public domain.
Didn't we already consider that 10 years ago?
Yeah, but they added
that the old advice we used to give people in social networks before we gave up?
But they added those privacy features where now you can make sure your stuff is super private.
And it's
everyone.
Really important for me to show my lunch to everybody, so I can't give that up.
That's supposed to be on Instagram, not Facebook.
Oh, I'm sorry. It shows what I know about social networks.
A subsidiary of Facebook.
Am I not supposed to talk about my gaming habit on LinkedIn?
I think that's the perfectly appropriate place to talk about your gaming.
I think that's just because you want my job.
Exactly. Not really much of a takeaway here. I mean, all it really does is it can link your phone number to your Facebook account, basically reviving an old feature. What is this, Mr. Producer?
Oh, just watching Facebook stock.
Is it tanking? No. Oh, bummer. Couldn't happen to a better company.
$535 billion market cap.
That is a lot. $535 billion market
Not
cap.
Not quite a trillion. So there you go, Facebook. If you maybe make people pay for that information instead of just putting it in a public database, you might get up to a trillion.
Ah, that blows my mind. That is a ton of money for just basically stealing and selling people's information.
Stealing? We're the idiots that gave it up long ago.
Willfully.
Don't divert blame. It wouldn't have happened if we didn't let it.
It's their fault. Damn you, bot Zuckerberg. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Can you review on Google Podcasts yet?
Probably not.
Probably
Google,
not.
What's going on?
Send them
Everyone
a letter.
Has the stars.
If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at XORRO underscore. Corey is at SecAdept. And the both of us are at hashtag the443podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you again next week.
By the way, why were you asking me? I'm the iOS guy, as you so popularly point out all the time. You're the dude with the Android phone in front of you. You should know this.
Get Google out of my life right now.